Ask Ryan and Bart how to do that. How to choose things. How to react. Two real smart guys will tell you how to do that. How to do that podcast show.
Welcome to How to Do That podcast. This is episode number 7. We've made it 7 episodes.
Lucky number 7.
Oh, I'd say so. And what better way to start episode number 7, Mr. Bart Kristoff, than with a shot? Because I think this is going to tie in well to our first main topic today. Cheers! Mmm. That tasty fireball.
Ugh.
On a chilly day today, 40 degrees in Austin, Texas. Ugh. That'll warm you right up.
Yeah, that just made every hair on my body stand up straight. Oh, man.
Speaking of doing shots.
Yes.
I'd like to take a moment to direct our listeners out to table.delivery.
What does that have to do with taking shots?
I mean, if you've been taking shots and you aren't able to go out and get food yourself by driving, have somebody deliver it to you. And why not table delivery with coupon code SWEETUMS, SWEETUMS. It'll give you $10 off your first order.
Yes, and that's a good point because, you know, when you're deciding, hey, you know what, I want to save a little money tonight and I don't want to go out to the bar and spend, you know, $3 or $4 a beer and $4 or $5 a shot.
Mm-hmm.
You sit at home, you crack open a little bottle of whiskey or you get yourself some of the beer out of your fridge and you have yourself a nice little night watching funny shows on TV. And then all you got to do is order in some food. And that's it.
It's perfect.
You got the whole night complete.
Absolutely. Man, I bet the table delivery folks are very busy today because I know back up north it's a blizzard.
In
the northern half of the country. And in the south here, man.
Oh, yeah, in Austin.
It's chilly here, too.
Nobody wants to go out right now.
There's some talk of snow in hill country overnight.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Well, I know when you texted me, you said, there is no one here at the bar right now. And I walked in, and you're right. It's like, it's dead.
Except for those 5 people there. They're no one to us. Screw them.
But, yeah, I walked in, and I'm like, man, this is a night with, I think it's because of that rain and the cold and people are like, I want to go home and curl up by a fireplace. Well, there's not a lot of fireplaces in Austin, but
our house has a fireplace and maybe 2 times a year you can use it, like, legitimately.
You just go by do you buy that like fire log?
Yeah, we've done that in the past. The Java log, I think, is the one they sell at Whole Foods. Yeah. That's nice. Yeah.
Yeah. Cause you don't have to have a stockpile of wood. You don't have to do the glass thing, especially because glass logs are expensive and you're only going to use them once a year.
Right.
If definitely the fire log is the cheapest, you know, on your way home and you go to the grocery store and you pick up a fire log for $10.
Yeah. And if you have scrap wood, that works too.
Oh, yeah. You can chop up your TV stand.
Sure. Oh, I saw the guy from Table Delivery, buddy of mine, Luke. I was at a bonfire at his house in Mankato, Minnesota, and I want to say like 2008 or 9 or something, maybe even earlier than that. And he was going to demo some of his house anyway to like tear out a wall. But we were at a bonfire in his backyard, and he ran out of firewood, so he literally went in the house with a sledgehammer and knocked down the kitchen wall and threw it on the fire.
Oh my gosh.
True story.
And you know what? You know that kitchen wall had to have all kinds of chemicals and stuff, and that couldn't have been safe for you to be breathing that smoke.
Probably not.
Because isn't that the number one thing you see on TV where they're like, were you working in this factory and did you breathe in asbestos?
Mm-hmm.
Call us for... That's you. You were breathing that in his house.
Yeah, I think we must have been.
Oh,
and God only knows what wiring and stuff got knocked down, but it must have been okay. I think he sold the house for profit, so...
Well, that's good.
Yeah.
You guys just won't live as long.
Our How to Do That podcast is also a blog. I'm not sure if those of you out there listening knew that or not, but
what? There's a blog?
Yeah, we have 57 posts up now, 3 new ones since the last podcast, including how to choose the right Christmas tree for you, which is pretty valid. I did some research on that one. By the way, what do you like, real or artificial? Because people are really passionate about which tree they prefer, but you seem kind of middle of the road.
Well, so I don't know. It depends. If I have to do it, mm-hmm. if it's for me at my place, I'm doing artificial because I don't want to mess with it. But if it's at my parents' place, I will beg them till the day I die to get a real tree if I'm going there for Christmas, because they have to take care of it.
Sure.
So I don't care. I just want the real tree when I'm there. But at home, I'm like, yeah, I'm just going to set up a artificial.
Yeah, we had done the real tree for like 5 years in a row. And it's just, A, you have to buy a new one every year. You know. And B, the needles make a damn mess in the car.
Then you got the chemicals and the base, and you got to be wary of like dogs drinking it. Yeah. So you got to cover it with that stuff. It's like, it's just a pain.
And you got to make sure to water it all the time or it'll go up in flames. I think artificial is the way to go, even though I know that 500 years from now, that tree is still going to be sitting in a garbage dump somewhere.
Oh.
It won't decompose, but it's a small price to pay.
It's a small price to pay.
And if you keep it for like 30 years, it ends up costing only like $12 a year or something.
Not even. Some of the artificial trees you can get on Black Friday are like $20 for like a 18-foot freaking fake tree.
That's amazing. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think
you
artificial
look on
all
Black
the way.
Friday.
I mean, there's something to be said for that smell of the pine and the sap and all that, but
I do prefer it, but again, as far as if it's in my place, I'm not doing a real tree.
Mm-hmm.
It's a mess. Now, someday if I have children and I want to get them into the holiday spirit, and that's probably why you have been doing it for the past few years, right? It's because of Johnny, right?
That didn't factor into my decision.
Oh, it didn't?
No.
Oh, okay.
But it could.
Well, I take that back then.
You know, the funny thing is, once I had this friend named Dustin Koima, and he was very passionate about getting a real tree and cutting it down in the woods every year and making like a big tradition out of it. Well, one year he cut this tree down, you know, and it was probably dark outside. He hauled it, you know, he strapped it on top of his pickup. He got home, put it in the house, and there was a badger living in it. And the badger got out in the house because he couldn't cut it down, and the badger rode all the way back with him. So that's one danger.
Where was this tree farm at?
Must have been somewhere north of the Twin
Cities. Was it a tree farm, or did he just...
No, it was just out in the woods.
Oh my god, so he destroyed a habitat.
Yeah. So he literally brought
this
wildlife into
his house.
This
wasn't the guy I met in Vegas.
No, you've never met this guy.
Oh.
I wouldn't even know this guy if I saw him. He looked like a miniature John Candy.
All right,
but,
well...
Yeah, anyway.
If you get a chance, look him up on Facebook.
Yeah,
because you said his full name.
Oh yeah, right.
Oh well.
You'll also find on the blog a couple other articles, including one that's how to move your garbage dumpster out to the curb, which seems so simple, but boy, there's a lot of nuances to it.
Garbage dumpster
or your garbage bin trash day.
Yeah.
And also one on how
to make you have a whole dumpster. How much crap do you have in your place that you need a whole dumpster?
Well, we do have two recycling bins.
Well, that makes sense.
Yeah.
No, that's good, though. That means you're...
We're very green.
Yeah, very green, except when it comes to the artificial tree.
Yeah.
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 And although, you know what? Here's the thing I'll argue against that. You know how people say, oh, the artificial tree is going to be in the dumpster, in the whatever.
Yeah.
But you're cutting down a live tree and killing it.
And I guess the carbon footprint is pretty bad on that, too, when you have to haul a truckload of trees from somewhere where trees grow to somewhere where they don't. Like, to get them to Austin, I don't see any pine tree farms around here. Like, they probably came from at least Kansas.
Right.
So the carbon footprint's pretty bad.
And
you're
killing the badger's natural habitat.
Mm-hmm.
And you do not want a badger in your house.
No, you don't.
That's the worst animal. I mean, you ever watch that honey badger video back in the day online?
Oh, yeah.
That Randall guy that narrated it? It's a good one.
I remember, yes.
All right, we're getting way off topic here.
But,
jeez.
One of
go,
the
to, go to the blog.
Okay, yeah, go to our blog. That's howtodothat.co.
Wait, what was the other post you were going
to... Oh, we have one about visiting state borders, how to, like, justify visiting a state border. If you're driving down the road and you see the, oh, hey, look, up ahead, we're almost to Tennessee. Do you pull over?
Mm-mm.
Or is there any good reason you can think of to pull over?
Only one.
What?
There's only one state border you can visit in the entire United States.
What?
The Four Points, because then you get all four state borders.
Sure, that's a great one. There's 50. Did you know there's 59 points in the country where three states come together?
I didn't. I don't care about them.
No. Okay.
I just want the four.
I want to
be sold my little tchotchkes by the native population that sits there at the Four Points. And I don't know if you saw that movie where they were trying to have sex on the Four Points.
Oh no.
And then, like, they got caught, and then all the police were fighting over whose jurisdiction it was, because it was on the Four Points.
Oh, wow. I heard that that monument may not actually be in the exact right spot. Did you hear that? That it might actually be, like,
oh, really?
Like 400 feet to one direction wrong or something?
I've never heard that, but now that we're talking about this, how to justify stopping at a state border is if you want to commit a crime.
Mm-hmm.
Because you can do it while in both states. You put one leg in each state. And then you commit the crime, and then they can't figure out who the hell's jurisdiction it is.
Right. That even applies to counties sometimes.
Yeah, so if you, like, want to masturbate in public, then
yeah,
there you go.
I know one person.
How many people just turned this off right after I said that?
Very few. Everybody, listeners just tuned back in because of that. I would assume. I knew somebody who once stood at the border of South Dakota and Minnesota and peed over it.
Did he pee in both states at the same time? Like, no. Did he hit the line, or was he?
He stood in South Dakota and peed into Minnesota.
Ooh. Yeah, that is a tough one, too, because since your pee didn't hit the ground in the state that you're standing in, can they say you committed... They could say you exposed yourself.
Yeah.
But as far as, like, actually peeing in public...
Mm-hmm.
Did you pee in public?
I don't know. I guess it depends
on... If the pee doesn't hit the ground... Does it count as being in public?
I don't think so. It can't.
Like, if you were able, like, let's say you're in our state right now of Texas, and you went out and you peed, but your pee just disappeared into nothingness. It never hit the ground. It just disappeared into space. Could they arrest you for peeing in public?
I would probably guess, yeah.
But wouldn't they be amazed that the pee was not...
Yeah, I guess it could possibly freeze on impact. Is that possible?
Well,
or just
I don't
dissolve.
Think it matters if it's in a solid or gaseous or gaseous. Can you imagine it's in a gas form? You're
just
peeing
steam
gas.
Steam coming out.
steam coming out of your wee.
Yeah.
Wow. Would be... That would only be near a volcano, I think.
Let's test that out someday.
Peeing on a volcano?
Yeah.
All right. I'll follow your lead on that. Go first. If unsuccessful, I'll try. If successful, I'll try. But I'm going to wait until you're dead from trying to pee.
I'll probably fall in.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
more than likely. Check us out on Twitter at howtodothatco. On Facebook at howtodothat.co is our username. And we're also on Instagram now at howtodothat.co. I don't know why you'd follow us on Instagram. We don't have any pictures to share, but...
Except of a man peeing on two states.
So I wanted to start this episode with one unrelated question to the other main topics we're going to talk about. And this came up on Facebook the other day. I just asked the general question, do you tip on takeout orders or not? Because I really wanted to know.
That's actually a good
question. Really wanted to know. Like, I always do. I tip like $2 or $3. And I always, after I leave, I'm like, why did I just tip that person? What did they do? They handed me a bag. They didn't wait on me.
So
they didn't give me any refills.
What kind of place were you at? Like, what was this?
It was Thai. It was a Thai food place, and I had gotten takeout, and it required...
And they handed you the receipt? Like, you hadn't paid yet, or you had paid already?
I had to pay at the restaurant.
Okay,
and
then they handed you the
receipt. Yeah, so there's a place to sign there for the tip, and the food wasn't ready yet.
So here's the thing. I don't think, no matter what, you can get away with just not tipping because you're an ass.
Yeah.
So you got to put at least a buck down. You put a buck down, that's a generous... I think that's a generous offer for a tip on a takeout.
Yeah.
But if you're able to pay online ahead of time, I would definitely do that and not tip. Because I go to a Mod Pizza. They're all over the country. They're big chain. And I get salads from the one near my place a lot, and I walk over there and pick it up. But I prepay online.
Uh-huh.
So there's no way I can give them a tip. I'd have to take cash out and put it in their little jar.
Yeah.
I'm just not going to do that. And I think they understand that.
Right, right. When I posed this question to Facebook, there was a lot of people in that exact camp that gave the same answer that you gave. But
really?
Yeah, there were people that were like, oh, just pay online. You don't have to worry about that. But there was one actual waitress who chimed in, and she was like, no, you better damn well tip, because I took your order on the phone. There's customers waiting here in line. I put it in the bag for you. I stood there and waited for you to show up. I made sure the order was right. That deserves something, right? I guess I get that, but I don't know. I mean, okay, I think of tipping as somebody's coming over to my table and filling up my water cup and things like that.
Well, here's my arguments to this is, first of all, the restaurant should have some kind of policy. If the restaurant wants business from takeout, then, I mean, think about it this way. If a favor driver or a table.delivery driver or a Postmates driver or any of these many companies that do the food delivery, obviously table.delivery being the best, but
clearly,
any of these companies doing that, do they tip for the takeout? No, they're not tipping for the takeout.
No.
And they're just taking 100% of your tip for themselves. And so to me, it's like, what's the difference if I go in to pick up the order or they go in to pick up the order? You're not getting tipped either way, and you probably shouldn't, because the restaurant should have some kind of policy on takeout orders because they want that business. If the restaurant does not want that business, if the restaurant says, we don't want takeout business, then that means the only business you're going to get and the only tips you're going to get are from the people sitting there. But if the restaurant wants takeout business, they should have some kind of policy that says, and to this waitress that I don't know who this is that commented on your thing, but I'm sorry, Miss Waitress, you work at this restaurant, you should talk to your bosses or whatever. If you are constantly, if your time is being taken up by takeout orders to where you're not making actual money on serving people and making tips, then that means that you should talk to your owners and bosses and say, hey, I would rather be serving people and making money. I'm not going to do takeout orders anymore. You should do the takeout orders, Mr. Manager, because you're getting paid a salary. And that's fine.
Yeah.
But again, is this server getting paid so little that they aren't making enough money to survive? Like, here's the thing. A lot of people are think they're very deserving of commissions, tips, bonuses, depending on what industry you're in.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, when I worked in, I used to work in retail, and I used to sell TVs and computers on commission, on pure commission, 100% commission. I got no base.
No base, wow.
No base, nothing. And so, to me, if the boss says, hey, go clean that shelf over there, well, you're not paying me to clean that shelf. But I can't think that way, because the only reason I even have the opportunity to make the money that I'm making at that place is because that place gave me a job. And so my overall commission throughout the year, if you look at it as throughout the whole year, I made money.
Yeah.
I worked my job. And so if I have to clean a shelf every once in a while that I don't get paid for, that's just part of that job. You can't say that I should get paid extra to clean the shelf.
Right.
Even though you're 100% commission. That's the way I feel about it. Because I've worked on pure commission. Yeah. I mean, she's only working on maybe minimum wage waitress salary, which is probably $4 to $5 or whatever. And then you get tipped on top of that. So if she looks at her total salary throughout the year, is she saying that if she had been tipped on 100% of the takeout orders, that she should have made an extra 10 grand? Is that worth 10 grand to the restaurant to have her be taking takeout orders? No.
No.
And that's my point.
No, I get it. No, I worked one job in my life where tips were associated with it, and that was wedding DJing. And I came to expect a tip, and if I didn't get like at least $100, I was irate, because I got paid very little. Again, like, this was, I signed up for some wedding DJ gig with a company who paid you a very, very low base. It was like, okay, this is on you, man. They're getting the reason they chose us as a company is because it's so cheap.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's up to you to go out there and like wow these people and get a big tip. And I got tips that were upwards of $500, and I got tips of $5, and I got tips of nothing. And I felt very entitled to a tip. But now looking back, it's like, after I got married and I had a wedding DJ of my own, it was like, well, Jesus, we just paid $800 for this guy. Why do I give him another 100? I don't think people realize like how much the $800 went to him versus the company. I mean, he probably only got $100 of it.
Well, I definitely believe on a full service thing like that. And that's a different scenario again, because it's not like a bunch of micro transactions. It's a single one-time big transaction for the service.
Yeah.
On that, you're definitely tipping that person for their full service. So if they did a good job, you're going to tip them well. And if they did a crappy job, you're going to tip them poor.
Yeah.
And that's just how it works. Because as you know, I got recently married. So I went through that with the photographer.
Mm-hmm.
Went through that with the DJ. But those are single. This isn't micro transactions.
Yeah.
And so on a smaller level, when this person's serving at a bar or restaurant, they have a $30, $40 bill at the table, and then they get tipped their $8, you know, good for them. But if they jump on the phone for 5 minutes to take that takeout order, you want to keep these people engaged, because what happens when your restaurant starts becoming dead because people are just pissed that you aren't taking orders over the phone. And then you go, oh, well, the restaurant can't get any business, so now I'm going to go get another job because I need to get another job. And then at that place, you could cause the same problem because you're deciding, I'm not taking those orders because I don't get tipped my $2 on those orders. Come on.
Right.
It's all, you're all part of the team. It's part of... people nowadays, millennials especially, are just not the same working class that I think you and I grew up in a different age.
Right.
Because I know you're a very hard worker.
I may give that impression.
Well, all right, let me put it this way. If a task needs to be completed,
oh, yeah,
you do complete it, you don't complain about it, and it gets done on time, right? So I understand that what you're saying is you're... company sometimes may not give you the full spectrum of what you need to complete all your stuff. But
I need deadlines. That's what I need. Side note.
Right. So, but what I'm saying is you have that like tenacity of, I'm just going to get this done.
And yeah.
I think
yeah.
a lot of people today are more like on the reverse side. It's I'm deserving.
Yeah.
I'm deserving of this. Sorry. I've ranted a lot about this because I just get mad when.
So at the end of the day, you and me after that, we order some takeout from some Chinese place down the street, you're probably not going to leave a tip, or you are. You're going to leave a dollar or two.
Here's what's going to happen. If I have to pay for it at the place and they hand me the little receipt and the person's watching me, yeah, I'm putting a buck on there.
Yeah. I think my general rule of thumb is if the food isn't ready yet and I don't tip, there's still a chance they could do something to it or they could delay my order from coming out.
Well, so but when you're saying the food's not ready yet, does that mean they gave you a time and you showed up too early, or you showed up too late, or?
Yeah, I mean, I guess if they gave me a time and I showed up at that time and it wasn't quite ready yet, but it's time for me to tip, to me that's an opportunity for them to, oh, this guy didn't tip. Let's just hold his order back there for 10 minutes.
Yeah,
I feel like, I don't know if anybody's actually
Wait,
done wasn't something like that.
In a Curb Your Enthusiasm episode?
God, it probably was.
No, I think 100% this was where he. He went to pick up the takeout food from the Chinese restaurant, and then he tipped like very little or something, and then the guy was like, well, why didn't you tip for my service when he came back the next time?
Uh-huh.
And he had screwed up the orders.
Oh, was that with the shrimp?
I think so.
He got like somebody else's order, and they ate three of the shrimp?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I was thinking that we could have done this episode tonight at the Volstead Lounge. It's Curb Your Enthusiasm trivia tonight.
Oh, my God. I just watched all of the seasons. It's fresh on my mind.
At 9 o'clock, we should go there right after this and just dominate.
Jeez.
Oh, I forgot about that. Well, we were going to talk tonight about...
Oh, my gosh. We're going to have to crank through these.
Yeah, I think that at least the third topic, we're going to be able to just crank through like nothing. But we're going to start out with a topic based on drinking. And I don't think we've talked very much about drinking alcohol on this show. No, I'm just kidding. We probably have. We talked a lot about it.
Yeah.
But this is about... We're talking tonight about that night where you know...
Well,
in
tell
advance,
them what the topic's called.
Heavy Drinking 101.
Yes.
We're talking about that time where you are planning in advance for a night out, and you know things are going to get crazy. Cray? Can we say cray on this show?
Cray-cray?
Cray-cray.
Which... is what happens to us every Wednesday, right? We're preparing.
Yeah.
As soon as we're doing this show, we're like...
As soon as we know that it's happening, it's like...
I've never seen someone pull out a pocket breathalyzer so much on there.
Yeah. I do have one. So, let me ask
you... Tonight, you're not going to pull it out, though. You don't need to.
I doubt I'll pull it out tonight.
Or unless it's a competition.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even drive here, so I won't.
But... Right. I don't own a car.
That's true, yeah. That's one less thing to worry about in my book.
Exactly.
Man.
I probably haven't driven a car in about 10 months.
God, do you think you still could? If you had to get on the road, would it be a struggle?
I think I'd be nervous, yeah.
Yeah.
I'm old now, too, you know. 35. Ugh.
Yeah. There was a comedy bit once. I think it was Louis C.K. that you're only... should be allowed... Oh, no, it was Jerry Seinfeld. You should be allowed to drive your age. The speed limit is your age.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that was a Jerry Seinfeld.
So when you're 65, you should be able to drive 65, but when you're 35...
It's like, once you're 100, you can go 100 miles an hour!
Because why do you care if you crash?
Yeah, I guess. You've earned that right.
All right, so I'll ask you first.
Okay.
All right. Because you kind of have prepared, and I know that you're prepared for a little bit of drinking tonight. So the question is, how to prepare for a night of heavy drinking? What did you do to prepare for this evening?
I'll tell you what, it's 90% mindset. to me. It has to be, you have to get in the right mindset. Like, tonight is going to be epic. You have to have this thought.
Do you think tonight's going to be epic?
You have to think that. Yeah. I mean, epic can be, it's all relative, I suppose. But
we'll tell the listeners next week how epic it was.
I mean, I think that there's, you have to get yourself in the right mindset. Like, at noon today, I was like, okay, it's Wednesday. We're doing the podcast. We might be having a few drinks. I need to get that certain mindset.
Now, let me ask you something. Does it excite you on Wednesdays? Do you get excited?
Oh, yeah.
You're like, it's podcast night?
For the first time in, like, a number of years, I've had, like, Wednesday night has become your Ryan's thing. Night out.
Yeah. All
right. And I haven't had that since before our kid was born.
That's awesome.
So, I mean, my wife's got her general night out of the week, and now I've got Wednesdays, and I look forward to it. And when Wednesday rolls around, I try, generally, to sleep a little longer in the morning, which today didn't happen because I had a physical therapist appointment. But generally, if I know it's going to be an epic night out and there's going to be some binge drinking, you want to sleep as late as you can.
Oh, that's a good point.
And I want to be productive during the day. I want to exercise and, I'll take another crown and diet. So I want to be productive during the course of the day and exercise and things like that. So when... when binge drinking time rolls around, I don't feel so bad about myself. It's like, well, I accomplished a lot today. I can go ahead and do this now. And that's how I get in that mindset.
Yeah, for me, how do I prepare for having any drinking? First thing is, I drink a lot of water before I go out, typically. Just so I'm hydrated. Because that's the reason you get hangovers bad, is you wake up the next day and you're just like, your lips are all like gross and you know, your head hurts.
Yeah.
So I do a lot of water. Definitely right on the sleep thing. Try to, if I don't get enough sleep tonight, into the day, then I'll take a nap.
Yeah.
Midday or whatever. And then the other thing is, as far as if I know I'm going out to party, I bring Imodium with me.
Nice. Oh.
You don't want to poop when, like, you're having a good time. Because you know what happens when you get drunk? You get hungry.
Oh, yeah.
And you don't get hungry for a salad or a sandwich or something that's going to, like, be okay in your digestive tract.
You want something like a chicken fried steak or that
caliber. Yeah, you want the greasiest, worst thing you can possibly eat for yourself.
Yeah.
In our case, we usually do the fiery boneless wings here.
Strong choice.
Yeah, and you know what's going to happen with that. You're going to have to poop.
Oh yeah.
So Imodium is how I prepare.
I usually take one. Yeah, I'll bring Gaviscon with me too on nights like
heart,
that.
Like a heart. Is that a heartburn or whatever?
Yeah, that's like a heartburn indigestion sort of thing.
Okay, yeah.
Like if I know it's gonna be epic, like your bachelor party, I had about 10 of those in my pocket just in case. But that wasn't really to prepare. That was more after the fact.
Yeah. That's how you prepare. And then also, I didn't do it today, but usually I will carry mints in my pocket because I feel like you get that beer breath thing going on.
Mm.
But the way to avoid that is, and we're not promoters of Fireball necessarily, unless Fireball wants to call us and be promoters. But Fireball, I saw an advertisement, and since I'm in marketing and you're in marketing, I thought it was genius, and they called it the beer breath killer. And I was
like, I bet it is.
Well, it's cinnamon.
Yeah.
I thought that was genius, though. That's a great marketing. Whoever came up with that, kudos.
It's basically like liquid Big Red gum, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So you get some bad breath with the beer, take a shot of Fireball.
Perfect. I'll ask you this one. How do you wake up early after a night of binge drinking?
So definitely right before you go to bed, drink a lot of water.
A lot, right?
Yeah. You know how they say do like 6 cups a day? You want to do like 16 cups right before you go to bed.
Yeah.
So you drink a lot of water. I think the other thing that is important is, and this is a weird statement, but you want to be very comfortable when you go to bed.
Okay.
You don't want to fall asleep in like the clothes you wore.
Oh, no.
Nothing like that. You want to get into like some fuzzy, warm PJs that you enjoy, and you lay down in that bed so that you sleep well.
Yes.
Because that's the worst, is if you don't sleep well. And so the other thing I'll say about that is, do not have regular sugared Red Bull. If you're drinking and like somebody wants to do shots, request sugar free.
Mm-hmm.
For whatever reason, sugared Red Bull will wake you up about 3 or 4 times throughout the evening, but sugar free doesn't. Once you go to bed, it seems to just kind of stay that way. So
sure, no, it makes sense.
So for you, how do you wake up early after a night of drinking?
Well, I was going to approach it from a little bit different angle. Let's say I didn't make all those preparations in time. Let's just say I passed out at night, and then I have to wake up in the morning. For me, I found I just have better luck if my alarm goes off. There's no hitting snooze. You just get the hell up and you start moving around. Like,
take a hot shower.
I've done it both ways. Like, you either just lie around all day and you wait for the hangover to go away, or you just get up and start moving around. You take a shower, you drink some coffee, you move, you go exercise. Like, even as hard as it is to do, and I
you're
know
right.
it's
if
really
you can
hard.
Power through a run.
If
you're
you can
golden.
Power, yeah, you have to try. Like, I'll shake a hangover very quickly if I just get up and move around.
That's true. And we live in Austin, so what that means is you can get a breakfast taco.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Which is amazing when you're hungover.
There's something about that tortilla. I don't care what's in the middle of it that just changes the game.
Yeah, my favorite is Rudy's.
Mm-hmm. The chopped.
Man.
Yeah, that is...
When you're hungover and you get some cheese and chopped brisket in there. Mm,
the chopped brisket is the best, yes. Gosh. I will give you that.
Oh, stop talking about it. I'm hungry. So I'll ask you this one. How to drink again the next day after a night of drinking?
Now, this happened a lot in my college days. Like, we would go on these little weekend road trips to visit a buddy at a different college, and it would be like you'd get hammered Friday night and you'd try to recover so that you could drink again Saturday night. And that rarely worked for me. Like, I could never pull off the back-to-back binge drinking things in those days. But I learned over the years. You know, I trained my liver, so to speak. But
isn't it weird as you get older? And you know what? I don't think it's training. Here's what I think it is it's we become more conscious of what makes us sick and what doesn't.
Uh-huh.
And we make better choices. So, like, you're doing diet and whiskey, right?
Yeah. And a top shelf whiskey.
Right. So you're doing a good whiskey. Uh-huh. You're not doing bottom shelf plastic bottle crap.
Right.
You're doing a diet, so it's not a bunch of sugar going into your body.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think you make those better decisions as you're drinking as well, which allows you the next day to power through and do that. But as a young adult, and I'm speaking for myself, but for you as well, I mean, we were idiots.
Oh, yeah.
They'd hand us a pink thing, we'd drink it. They'd hand us a blue thing, we'd drink it. I was chugging Boone's Farm. Do you remember Boone's Farm?
Of course, it was $3 wine, wasn't it?
Oh,
and it was colored. Like, there was a blue one, wasn't
there?
No,
yeah, no, there was ones like Hairy Buffalo, and like they were the worst things ever. And
yeah.
You would chug those, and then you'd even puke colors. Like, it was...
Those
are the decisions that you make that made you say, I can't do the heavy drinking. And I feel like as you get older, you make better decisions. But the biggest thing to look for is less sugar.
Absolutely.
As little sugar as possible. I know that Fireball does have a lot of sugar in it.
Yeah. I mean, we know our limits here.
Yeah. And also... Oh, sorry. I kind of took over your
answer. No, I basically... you continue. I didn't really have much of an answer.
I was just going to say... Because we're talking about how to drink again after the...
Yeah.
Yeah. So I drank till 3.
Yeah.
Well, whenever the bar closed and then was out getting pizza till 3.
Mm.
And so today for lunch, I went to a Chinese buffet and I diarrhea'd everything out.
Yeah.
Which is important. I think if you eat greasy stuff, you get it all out.
Sure.
And then when I came here, what did we do? Beer and a shot.
Shot, yeah.
Back into the game. I feel great now. I felt like shit when I showed up, but now I feel awesome.
I think the best example I can think of what you're talking about is a year when I went to Milwaukee for a Twins Brewers series, and we hit it hard on Friday night. And we woke up the next morning, and it was a day game, and it's like, we got to start drinking now, man. We got to start drinking, like, 8 in the morning. Like, how are we going to do this? And as bad as it sounds, at 8 in the morning when you wake up with a headache and your stomach aches and everything, a beer really will, honestly, kind of take you back to feeling pretty good. And I hate that hair of the dog routine, but in instances like that, it really does work.
Yeah.
If you can get one down... It'll...
That's why a Bloody Mary was invented. I mean,
I know. Oh, yeah, that's right. Bloody Marys. That is the hangover drink.
Yeah, because it's got all the nutrients and the vitamins, and then it also has the alcohol that gets you back in the swing of things.
Yeah.
And now they're just getting crazy with Bloody Marys where they got whole meals attached to them.
Yeah.
Oh. All right, so how about how to keep up with the heaviest drinker in your group? Which, by the way, I feel like that's you. I feel like I'd be keeping up with you.
I would think it would be you, honestly, but...
Well, what about when you had your housewarming party and you said you wanted to float the cake by yourself
no,
after
normally I am, yeah.
There's no way I could have kept up with you on that. And you tried!
My brother and me had this basic discussion over Thanksgiving where we both are probably equal with each other in terms of being the heaviest drinkers in our group. And we kept up with each other pretty much drink for drink. It's just a matter of if you have to set the tone, you have to set the pace, I think. I guess it depends if you're the heaviest drinker or if there's somebody heavier than you. But if I am, you know, I just set my own pace and here you go, everybody. Let's try to keep up. And that's terrible advice. I'm sorry.
You know what it is? It's when me and you get together, it's sometimes a bad situation just because I think with you, you're very jovial and you're like, yeah, give me another one. And you're like fun. And so then I'm like, I want to be like him. And I start doing it. But then you're looking at me and like a beer goes down for me like super quick. I don't know why. I can just chug through a beer. No problem.
Sure.
So when I'm doing the beers and then you look and you go, oh man, he's finished with his beer. I should order another drink for myself. And then you're trying to chug through yours. So I think we just feed off each other and it's bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, the answer to this question is you shouldn't try to keep up with the heavy. No.
No.
And my wife has been guilty of this in the past. She will be hanging out with me and my brother-in-law, Tim, and some other guys. And, you know, we'll be like pounding beer after beer. And she's like, well, shit, I got to keep up. And it never ends well.
No.
You can't do
that. My wife, too. I've gotten kicked out of venues because of it. So, yeah, no, I know what you're saying. Well, we're big guys.
Yes.
You know, you're taller. So how tall are you?
6'6".
6'6".
About 250-ish.
I'm 6'2", and I'm about 235-ish. Uh-huh. And yeah, so between the two of us, we can keep up with each other.
Most people come in and try to keep up with us, they would die.
Yes.
They would.
I know. And we have the livers that have been trained. But none of this sounds good. We sound like we have problems.
But that was the topic. We're talking drinking tonight. Hey, let me ask you this. Say this thing gets out of control and it's 1 a.m. and you're like, oh shit, I need to stop. How do you stop? How do you make yourself stop drinking so that you won't be so hungover the next day? Is there something you might do in advance of that? Or is it...
I don't know. You know, I guess I will sip on a beer to try to slow myself down.
Mm-hmm.
And then when it's time to order something else, I'll usually just order like soda water and a lime. So it looks like I'm drinking something. And I'll
fake
just sip on it. Yeah, like the fake drink. And then that way people think I'm still drinking. Because that's the biggest problem. It's not that, like, if you want to stop, you can just stop. You just, some of us can. But if you say, hey, I'm done. Like, I can stop right now. If I said, yeah, I don't really feel like it, I could do that. But if we're in a group of like 20 people, it's usually the other people influencing that causes the issue.
Absolutely, yeah.
So what would you say? What do you do to stop yourself drinking?
It's tough. There's two things.
Because I see you have notes on this.
I did write this down. Normally, I'm kind of conscious of how much money I'm spending. And if I'm the one paying for my own drinks, you know, which is typically the case, then I'll be like, oh, crap. I've probably got an $80 tab up there right now. I got to stop. Like that's
You
one
can
way.
Yourself have an $80 tab?
Well, I mean, at a place of $8 drinks or something, or $12 drinks, I guess. I don't
so
know.
10 drinks.
maybe. That's one way. I'm usually thinking about my credit card there, or my debit card is like, shit, how much have I spent? The other thing is, I've thought of this before. Have I ever implemented it? No. But I'm like, I've told people in the past, like, make sure I don't drink too much. Okay, I'm putting you in charge of me. Make sure
that,
at midnight.
That doesn't work.
No, it never does.
No, because then the person thinks it's funny to make you drink even though you're not supposed to.
Yeah. It doesn't work. But if you can swing it, I would say that's one option. Have somebody be in charge of you.
Yeah, I think it's a tough one. If you have a problem.
Yeah.
So how do you know when you're supposed to take an Uber and leave your car?
Well, this is a question I wrote in direct response to last week's podcast because I drove here and we had a few drinks and it was like...
And then you slept in your car.
I did. I had two options and the two options were I can kind of wait it out until I'm good to go. And by the way, I have a real breathalyzer, like the police.
We were testing it.
Yeah.
By the way, why was I still?
You were way under the limit.
I don't understand. And yeah. I had had at least 9 beers and 3 shots. Like, I don't understand how it's even possible.
So I had blown like a 0.086, which meant I'm not good to drive. But I knew that here's the thing. If I leave my car here overnight and I take an Uber home, it's going to be a major inconvenience the next day because I've got a kid to take to daycare and stuff like that. But if I just can hang out for another hour and a half, 2 hours, and try my breathalyzer again then, and I'm now under the limit, then, I mean, you got to determine how long it's going to take and is it worth it. And for me, I was right on that cusp of, I could take an Uber home, I probably should, but look how close I am. And I went out to my van, I folded the seats down, I threw a blanket over myself.
By the way, why do you have a blanket in your van?
Because I had just gone camping the previous weekend. Normally I wouldn't have that, but it was a really good thing that I did.
Keep it there for these instances.
Oh, well, maybe.
Do you have your breathalyzer tonight?
I didn't drive here, so no, I do not.
Oh, I was going to say, we could try later.
Topic for next week somehow. Yeah. But I made the decision to sleep in my van, and it was a really good night of sleep. Like, I...
You know our friend Teresa?
Yeah.
She plays next door pool.
Mm-hmm.
And I missed a text from her that she was playing, and I said, oh, crap. I said, Glanzer was sleeping in his van, and she goes, oh, my God, you should have told me. I could have gone over there and banged on his window and scared the shit out of him.
I would have, yeah. Dang it. I tell you, like I've said last time, I've got some shoulder issues going on. I woke up that next morning. Well, I may only slept like 2 hours in that van at the most. But when I woke up the next morning, I felt pretty good. I think maybe that sleeping on that hard surface of the van was a good thing. So I think basically the answer to this question is, unless you have a breathalyzer and you can pinpoint exactly what your blood alcohol content is, you should probably just take the Uber. Never drink and drive.
Never.
I was way under the limit by the time I woke up.
It's not worth it.
I had gone down to like a 0.05 by that point, so I was good to go.
I know you say it's a major inconvenience to get your car and stuff like that, but for me, it's very, very little inconvenience to versus being in a jail cell.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no question. Yeah. You should always opt that way.
Yes.
Well, should we go on to topic number 2?
Sure.
And we're going to try to help some friends out here. Maybe some people that are having some rocky
friendships. By the way, did she forget our drinks?
I think she did. God damn. I've been drinkless for 20 minutes.
That's what I was just saying. I'm like, I keep picking up this bottle and there's nothing in it.
I keep feeling like I've seen her head go by the door, but that might just be that deal or no deal machine flash.
She forgot.
Dang it. She'll be back.
By the way, why do you have a packet of M&M's? What is that?
It's some fun size M&M's because, you know, making things smaller makes them fun.
But
you
were eating those?
Yeah, I had that in my backpack.
Were you eating them tonight?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah, I had a couple while we were sitting here.
Okay. Just curious.
No, it's a perfectly good question. So, say you and your wife, and maybe me and my wife, are going out, two couples, and we've got some friend, some like fifth wheel that comes along. I don't know, we'll just call him Bob. Bob wants to come along with us. How do you treat that fifth wheel, or third wheel, or seventh wheel?
Like complete shit.
Do you?
No. No, I don't care if they're, you know, just hang out and have fun and we can all be cool. But here's the problem, though. If that fifth wheel, here's where it gets different. The fifth wheel is a single dude. Sometimes it can get weird for the husbands. And if the fifth wheel is a single woman, it can get weird for the wives.
Mm, I can see that. Yeah.
So then the treating of that fifth wheel depends on who's involved. Like, if the wives are involved and it's a guy, they might all be on him, talking to him, you know, whatever. And then you, as a guy, you're in your head, you're like, why is my wife talking to this fifth wheel? And vice versa, the same thing, which, I'll be honest, that happens sometimes. You're out and there's like a girl with you and then all of a sudden you guys are talking like movie quotes or something, and then your wife's like, what the hell? And why are they so have so much in common? Stuff like that can happen. So how to treat them, I think, depends on that situation. If they're part of a couple and their other significant other was just not able to show up, then it's just like they're one of the crew.
But sure.
I do think there is some animosity when it becomes a single person situation, unless they're like so unattractive that no person would ever want to be anywhere near them.
Yeah. I'm very inclusive. Like,
I know you are, yes. I am too.
Yeah, we are. Yeah. When, like, if we were out, the four of us, and this Bob is along, I would probably, like, realistically, at the end of the night, have talked to Bob more than anybody else. Like, I'm all about, like, making people feel included if I can. One time I did it to a fault. I thought of a story when I was in Minnesota in 2005. I went to the state fair with my girlfriend at the time, and I brought along this dude from Poland who wanted to see the Minnesota State Fair for the first time. So he was a total third wheel. And I ended up spending basically the whole day with this dude from Poland. Like, the girlfriend became the afterthought, the extreme afterthought. Oh my God, was she mad. She wanted to ditch him so many times. Like, I almost do that to a fault sometimes, like trying to include people to the point where I'm ignoring the people that I realistically should be talking to.
Well, tonight we're going to probably have a third wheel because I think my wife's going to show up. So
does that make her the third wheel or me?
I think you.
Oh, but she's not part of the podcast.
That's true. Yeah, see, we're all married.
So either way.
You're my husband, podcast husband.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll find out later, I guess. But, okay. So the next one is how to deal with a friend who always has to one-up you.
I went through this at a past job. And the guy who sat next to me, I could tell him the most amazing story of what happened. Like, you should have seen me, man. I was driving and I hit a bump and my car was airborne for 30 feet and I landed and I crashed and I rolled. And his reaction would be, yeah, well, when I, back in high school, man, once I jumped a curb and I was airborne for 40 feet and I rolled twice and my car burst into flames. Like, he would have no reaction to my stories and his would always be just a little bit better every single time.
So how do you deal with that?
I would, at first I was very angry and I would not acknowledge his stories, but then I realized the better treat for me was to go into more detail because I realized he was probably lying. And I was like, oh my God, man, I don't believe that. Then what happened? And try to coax him into telling more of a story of it. And then kind of putting him on the spot. And I think eventually he caught on that I was...
So you'd be like, who was this person that saved you from your firing car? Show me their Facebook. I'm interested to see what they look like.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You probably know the guy, actually. But
I do?
You might.
All right.
Somebody from Minnesota.
Well, that doesn't narrow it.
From our past work experiences.
Oh. Did his name start with a B or a J?
No, a J.
Oh, the J that I mentioned I might go have a drink with?
I doubt it. No, not that guy.
Oh. Then no, I don't know.
Okay, I'll tell you off air.
All right.
So, I guess... Oh, you go
ahead.
Well,
for me, I was just going to say, I had a guy like this who every time... Like, you tell... you know, remember when I won my sweepstakes and I went and I got to meet Gary Payton and all that? We discussed that maybe in another episode. Uh-huh. But I'm talking about... Like, because somebody asked about it, and so I'm telling the story, and then he would... Like you said, always want to one-up you as far as his... And he'd be like, oh, once I was with Tiger Woods in his golf suite and blah, blah, blah. You know what? And so this guy did that all the time. You actually knew him, too, and we can talk about it off air.
Okay.
He lived here in Austin for a short period of time. I actually spilled beer on his couch and didn't tell him. It's kind of revenge, I guess. But he was this guy that, like, every time he wanted to be, like, the uppity... You know, oh, I know rich people and I know these people and I'm part of this big company that handles people's money and all this crap. And so I was very frustrated with him. And what I basically did was I just stopped hanging out with him.
Mm-hmm.
It's not worth the frustration. No, I read an article that says you should hang out with people that you want to, that make you feel good about yourself, that you have a good friendship with, that care about you. Why deal with anyone who doesn't? Now, I know in your situation, it's work.
Yeah, I couldn't escape the guy, but so, somebody's one-upping you every single time you have a story. Yeah, ditch him, right?
Yeah, just get rid of him. All right, so next one. How to carry on a friendship with someone you have lost common interest or bond with. Oh, well, that sucks.
We're at the common interest. Wow.
So wait, how does that happen though? What do you mean? Like,
well, I'll give you an example. When I was in college, there was a big group of us who were hanging out freshman year, and by sophomore year, a few people had transferred, some people had left. But by senior year, I mean, there was this girl at school who I knew. Her name was Laura, and we had been friends freshman year, and just over the course of time, like, had drifted apart, whatever. And our only the only thing still that remained in our friendship was when we saw each other on campus, we would say hi to each other. Hi, Laura. Hi, Ryan. And that's it.
What do you think caused the downfall?
I think the other common people that we knew had left or graduated.
But you didn't have anything at all in common except for the people?
More or less. I think at the end of the day, that's what we kind of figured out was like held us together. Like, we had nothing in common. Like, by the end of it, the only thing senior year, like, it was we would say hi to each other, and that was all the further like any conversation would ever go. Was hi, 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 hi. And then eventually it was like, this is kind of weird. Why am I even saying hi to this person? I have nothing else to say to her except for hi. I can't ask about anything else. We have nothing else in common.
So did you carry on the friendship or no?
No, one day we just saw each other and didn't say hi. And then from then on, we just weren't friends.
So how would you have carried that on then?
Well, how to carry on a friendship? Yeah, that's a good
point.
I said how to kill a friendship that you no longer have somebody in common with. For me, it was I dragged it on for a really long time just by saying hi in hopes that maybe it would spark back up. And again, it was just a friendship.
You should have just asked this person to hang out sometime.
I guess, yeah. I don't know. I don't really have a good answer. I wrote that question without thinking of a way to answer. What about you?
I think for me, it would be going out with that person one night and trying to figure out if there is some kind of common interest. we could rekindle that friendship. Because usually if you lose a common interest or bond, maybe you just didn't know all of the common interests and bonds that you two have together.
True.
Because you've always focused
on
that.
We're going to skip right ahead to topic number
and
three.
So then
here,
once that one disappears,
hashtag
can you go
winning,
out and find it?
And this is all about how to win at things.
Maybe,
and
I think maybe
we're
at
get
the
some
common
really
interest.
Interesting answers here because this is
definitely the deepest.
These are really subjective.
We've ever gotten on this podcast.
Where the hell's our drinks here?
I'll start off with the first one here.
How would you win at limbo?
I'd be about 5 feet shorter.
Yeah. Just be shorter, okay.
Yeah, I don't know, like, personally how I would win at limbo. I'm not very coordinated at all, so I would probably give up on even attempting to win at limbo.
Yeah, I don't think I could win it either. I don't think I could. I honestly, if everybody in this bar, which is probably like 20 people or so, were to play limbo right now, I'd probably lose. I'd probably be the first one out.
You know what would be cool, though, is if like, you and I practiced like a full year on limboing. Man. And then became so good at it that any time a limbo conversation came up, we just like destroyed everybody at limbo.
I think I would just knock over the bar. I think I'd just walk up to it and knock it over and claim some sort of foul. And be like, no, 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 somebody over there looked at me.
Foul!
Anytime our president doesn't agree with what a news network says, he just yells fake news or whatever. I could just say this bar is wrong. This bar isn't regulation high. I think you just gotta
sell it.
I guess.
That was a terrible answer.
We're not gonna.
All right, let's go.
I got it.
Oh yeah.
Even if you lose, even if you knock it off, you just get back in line. I mean, who's physically gonna stop you from continuing? I
have multiple disguises.
Yeah, or not. Just be yourself and get back in line 10 times. Keep losing.
How do you win at bingo?
Well, I guess you just have to play a lot of cards, typically. But I have a good one.
All right.
If the game goes on to a point where it's like, oh my God, how does nobody have a bingo yet? And a lot of boxes are checked off. You just yell bingo, fill in one of the things to make a bingo, and then hope that when you go up to have the card checked, they just like assume that you've got it because the game's gone on that long. And I have won a game once by doing exactly that.
I would just go up to the host and be like, I'll pay you half of whatever I win. here's my card.
Cahoots with you for that?
Yeah, exactly. Well, come on. Didn't you ever see that Curb Your Enthusiasm where he thought the lady at the nursing home was in cahoots with the other lady?
Oh, yeah.
She called out fake numbers on the balls to make sure that the other lady won.
Right.
So how would you win it? Horse, not win at horse like riding or horse win at horse. How do you win at horse?
Well,
the game horse, I'm assuming
with
you
a basketball.
Mean basketball.
Yeah, taking shots. The loser.
Not at the horse in the Olympics where you have to spin and flip.
Oh, no, not that one, no.
All right. Well, you can't be
the
Russian.
Pummel horse?
If you're Russian, you're not going to win at horse this year.
Nobody's going to win.
No Russians are winning at horse this year.
My, you know what? If I play a game of horse against anybody who's got any competent basketball skills whatsoever, I'm going to lose. So my thing is, you just shoot a layup every single time. Just stand right under the hoop and shoot a layup. Because when the pressure's on, you'd be surprised so often people miss that easy shot right under the hoop.
But don't you give yourself that pressure by doing that?
Not really. I mean, if you miss it, then I know it's your turn to shoot. There's no penalty. It's when they have to make the shot that you
make. Next time I play horse against you, then I'm going to
It's boring as hell, but if you have big money on the line, just shoot layup, just shoot layup, just shoot layup. I tell you, you'll win.
I usually just scream loudly when the person's about to shoot and try to scare them.
Nice.
That's how I win. How to win at roulette?
Well, I play the same number every single time.
That's
never ever changed.
Statistically, that's how you're supposed to do it.
I don't want to do red or black. I mean, you can lose all of... You could easily go in there with $100, put it all in black, and double it in one roll. And it's a 50-50 shot, basically.
That's what that whole movie Indecent Proposal is based on. Did you ever see that?
A long time ago.
With Woody Harrelson, Demi Moore, and Robert Redford.
Uh-huh.
That's where Demi Moore and Woody Harrelson take all of their money, and they decide to put it on one color to try and double it, because then she can get her art studio or whatever, and he can, you know, whatever. So they put all their money on a single color, and then they lose it. And so then Robert Redford makes a proposal to have sex with Demi Moore, his wife, for $1 million.
Oh, right. And then that was parodied in Kingpin.
Oh, was it?
Yeah, remember where, what's his name, Chris Elliott comes in and proposes $1 million to Woody Harrelson to have sex with Randy Quaid.
Oh,
and he
right.
was just a daydream. He was just a daydream. But I think just you put it all on the same number every time. I go 25 every single time. You can put it on the line of 25, you can put it all on 25. I just stick with one number. And I've had good luck that way.
Yeah, that's a way to do it. I think the way I do it is that, like, to win at roulette, roulette is hard to win at, but I usually just look at the board and see which color has come up often, which numbers have come up often, and I don't make necessarily a mathematical judgment, but my brain automatically assumes what I should and shouldn't be betting on, and I usually do okay.
Yeah, have you ever seen a streak where it's like 20 out of 21 have landed on black or something? I mean, that happened in Vegas last time. And it's like, your logic is, well, there's no way it's going to hit black again. And then it hits black again.
Well, but here's what you do. So you put your $5, like, let's say it's $5 minimum ticket. Mm-hmm. You put $5 down. If it hits black again, you lose, then you got to put 10. If it hits black again, you lose, then you got to put 20. Hits black again, you lose, you got to put 40.
Oh.
Hits black again, you lose, you got to put 80. Hits black again, you lose, you got to put 160. Hit black again, and lose, then you got to put 320. Hit black again, and lose, you got to put 640. And you got to keep doing that until you win.
Eventually, you will.
If you have the balls to do that, because at that point, you've lost over thousands of dollars, you know, because it adds up. So you have to have the balls to win at roulette.
Yeah.
Anyone can. Well, actually, then you're just breaking even. You're not even winning.
Right, but it's still a huge relief.
Yeah.
Remember that episode of The Simpsons where Homer just gets on the phone like, "Hi, Vegas, put 500 on black." Damn it! They could have told him anything. How do you win at Twister?
Ah, that's easy. It's real easy. You act really super creepy during Twister.
Yeah. You stole my answer, yep.
Is that really your answer?
Yeah, it really was.
Oh, man, we think alike. So basically, you and I cannot play Twister together.
No, we'll just be a mess at the end of it.
Yeah, at the end of it, everyone will have left. It'll just be me and you being really creepy together, and then people will be like taking videos of us being creepy.
Yeah, I was thinking the same thing. My answer that I jotted down was like, lean into someone who you know doesn't want to be touched by you or something like that, which is basically
the same thing. I'll give another answer instead of just being creepy, is smell terrible.
Yeah.
In any way, like breath, armpits, junk.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
You just like don't take a shower for 3 days, invite a homeless person.
I think another thing is to really accentuate, like if you're bent over with your butt in the air, is to just like really perch it up and like, make it, I don't know how to word it, but you know, kind of parade around with it up in the air like,
okay, this is creepy. That's back to the creepy.
Now, yeah, it's once again back to creepy. It's like, oh my God.
I just imagine this butt parading in the air.
Yeah, you subtly move it towards someone's face or something, and they're like, okay.
Then do you fart?
You could.
That would make you win, I think. You fart in someone's face during Twister, they're going to give up.
Now, do you think that we'd be an advantage being six whatever, 6 foot two?
No, I think I'm very uncoordinated.
I'm unflexible and uncoordinated, yeah. But I'm tall. Like, theoretically, I should be able to reach all corners of the board.
I have no muscles either, so it'd be like, well, I don't have no muscle, but I don't have enough muscles to, like, I think if you're a gymnast, you're probably excellent at Twister. If you're, like, in Cirque du Soleil, no one's beating you.
No.
That would be the awesomest thing, is if you're in Cirque du Soleil and you just enter Twister tournaments.
Yeah. The real strategy I looked up was, here's the way you actually win, is as soon as the thing lands on, it's like, right hand red, you have to be the first one. You want to be on the lowest level so that everybody else has to go over the top of you to get to it. Mm-hmm. Like, you want to make it... If you're quick enough, you make it so other people have to climb over you to get to it, and generally people fall at that point. So you just have to be quick. Go ahead.
How do you break open a piñata?
How do you win at piñata? Well, I'll tell you how not to win. When I was a kid in preschool and we did a piñata for Halloween, and there's a video of this, I kept standing too close to the people who were swinging the bat. And like three straight times, I got hit in the face with a bat instead of the pinata. And I was bawling by the end of it. Like, they moved me way out of the way, like to the outside of the circle. And
You get hit three times with the bat?
Well, they
spun. How did they let you get hit after the first time?
Well, it's funny. It was just by mere coincidence. This kid, they put the blindfold on him. They spun him around. And they like, okay, go hit it. And he just wandered like around like 10 feet away from the pinata.
How did they let him wander 10 feet away from the
pinata? And then he comes over to me and just smacks me on the head with the bat. And like, it was me again. And I'd moved the furthest out of the way of everyone. So that's how not to win at pinata. But man, to win it, I think it's all about knowing when to go. The first person's not going to win, right? The second, third, fourth, maybe the fifth person has a shot. Don't jump to the front of the line. In my opinion, you want to be at least sixth in line. Okay. That's when the pinata is going to be ripe for the smacking.
See, I would say for me it would just be to cheat.
Oh?
Yeah, make sure you can see it.
Mmm.
And that's when you go at it. Because I think pinata is... it's difficult too, because some pinatas are like so weakly made.
Yeah.
One good strike on the first one, it's down. It's done.
Right.
It's exploded. Or if it's your head, in your case, it might be cracked open after round one. So, yeah. The other thing you can do to win a piñata is, I don't know if you have noticed with children in particular, usually they hand them like a plastic wiffle ball bat or something to hit the thing because they don't want them to injure other people. So you could just have your own bat.
Oh, one that's real.
Like a real bat. Maybe it has spikes in it.
Yeah.
And that's how you win a piñata.
The other thing... is if you're, especially if you're a kid, if you're the kid who can't break it open or whatever and cries and like everybody feels sorry for, you know, an adult might come and help you like knock it open. I think if you show that you're the most emotional one there, the one who is the saddest that you can't break it open.
Why can't I get my candy?
Yeah, somebody then will probably take pity on you.
That was a weird, no kid sounds like that. Why can't I get my candies?
That sounds like a kid to me.
All right. How do you win at musical chairs?
Okay. So there's one fewer chair than person, right? That's how this works. There's eight mm-hmm. people and seven chairs, so one person's not going to get a chair.
Mm-hmm.
That's a tough one, too, because I feel like I've been on the outside looking in on this one so many times. I think you just have to establish aggressiveness early on that
when
you get a chair, it's like you make it very well known. Elbows are flying. Like
yes,
you knock
you
the
shove.
Chair.
You shove the hell out of that
So hopefully the person next to you will be like, oh, shit, well, I'm not going to go for the chair Glanzer's going for.
Exactly. Let them go for each other. Let them kill each other. That's I would say the same thing, actually.
Yeah.
I'd just be shoving the crap out of that person
right.
next to me. And then that way they look at me and they go, I'm going to go for the other guy trying to get his chair.
Mm-hmm. I bet people have suffered some bad injuries in musical chairs over the years.
I'm sure they have. And probably with the next one, too.
How do you win at Duck Duck Goose? Or as they say in the greater Minneapolis area, Duck Duck Gray Duck?
Well, so I think the thing with Duck Duck Goose is it's mathematical. I mean, mm-hmm. you're it goes Duck Duck Goose. So, you know, you have to figure out where it's starting.
Oh, no. The person who's doing that can just say duck as many times as they want.
Oh, they can?
They can go duck, 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 goose.
So I guess then you just have to befriend that person because they would be the ones that would screw you over on purpose. That sounds that seems like a terrible game.
Well, here's the thing.
I thought it was... Oh, yeah.
No, you don't just... It's not just the third person.
You're right. But then what does a goose have to do?
So when you tap on the person's head and say goose, now it's a race to get back to the seat of the person who you called goose. Which, I mean, the person who
What do you mean? So the person has to run on the outside of the ring to get back to their seat, but then what do you have to do as that person that called it?
The person who called it? Now it's you and that person whose head you touched are in a race against each other to go sit down in that one...
Inside of it? No, you're on the outside.
You're on the outside. You both are fighting for that one seat that the person who you called goose was previously sitting in. And it's really hard for the person who was called goose to get there ahead of you because you can get a head start. You can... And here's the thing... The easiest way to win it, kindergartners themselves know it, you just tap on the slowest person's head. You know who's the obviously not going to beat you back to that spot.
Right, but they can do that again. Like, so when does the game end?
It doesn't.
No, I don't this think game
it,
sucks.
I don't think it ends. I think
how to win at Duck Duck Goose? No one wins at Duck Duck Goose.
Yeah, there are no winners in this children's game of chance.
Man.
Do you have any other ones we can throw in? Or is that seems like quite a few.
Yeah, how many minutes are we at right now?
We're well over an hour.
How's well over now?
105, 106.
Oh, yeah, we're good. We should move on.
Okay, so there's a reader mailbag question. I don't know if it says this on yours, but it came to me while we were sitting here. Oh, no, I handwrote one in here. And this is an awesome mailbag question. My favorite one we've ever gotten. This comes from Elizabeth in Minnesota. She just now texted me and she said, How do you behave or how do you react when you're at a campfire or a bonfire and somebody breaks out a guitar? Oh. And
is the person good?
Well,
or do you have a reference? Do you know why she's asking this?
In Elizabeth here, the reason she asked was because she was at a bonfire or she's been at many bonfires or parties or something where it's the same friend who breaks up the flow of the party and like, hey, everybody look at me. I'm going to play guitar. Like, how do you react to that? Do you...
Tell them to shut the fuck up.
Yeah, normally it's like people are sitting around a campfire and they're having a great conversation or something and then all of a sudden it's like Kumbaya starts. It's like, oh shit. Can we carry on our conversation or can we have to all stop Kumbaya, and listen to this?
My Lord, Kumbaya. Kumbaya.
And then she says... And do you sing along, bob your head with your eyes closed like you're very into it, or do you give them the evil eye for ruining a nice party? I think that's a great question.
I would literally say, shut the fuck up and get out of here. I mean, come on.
Yeah.
If you guys are having fun and there is like, okay, like let's say somebody says, hey, Jimmy, pull your guitar out. We'd love to hear some tunes.
Yeah.
Okay, so then there's a different reaction because someone said it and they're doing it. Now, if you're the guy who plays guitar, you could have a plant in the audience that says that to you at some point so that you can, you know, show your guitar skills off.
Sure, sure.
But, I mean, to be quite honest, before the thing even started, I'd be like, no guitars allowed at my bonfire. This is a bonfire for people to just have fun and hang out.
Yeah.
Because that sucks.
Yeah.
You don't want that.
I agree, yeah. Especially if it interrupts the flow of a perfectly good party. Now, I've been at parties where... The guitar player broke out the guitar and it's like, oh, thank God. Finally, that silence is broken. We can all come together. It's a great icebreaker. Sometimes the guitar actually starts the party.
And then sometimes it puts you to sleep at the party.
Yeah. I think in my situation that Elizabeth is talking about here is I just move away from the guitar player. Even if we're all sitting around a fire, you start nudging each other. It's like, come on, let's go walk over here.
That's a good point. You get everyone to leave.
Yeah, everybody leave.
Go start another bonfire.
Yeah.
You take pieces of your bonfire, create another bonfire over there, and then you circle around that, and then the guy's by himself at his own bonfire.
Yeah.
How does this guy not get the hint, though? Like, do people clap during this?
Apparently it's really awkward. Like, he'll sing for, like, a half hour by himself, and people are like... They're trying to make it as obvious as possible that they're not into it by not joining along, and he doesn't
get the
clue.
It's making me not want to move to Minnesota.
I guess I can't say for sure where this happened, but...
obviously, it's in Minnesota.
Probably Minnesota, yeah. I have been informed by my friend Elizabeth, who wrote that question, that this guy is no longer invited to these sort of parties for fear of him breaking out the guitar.
I just tell him not to bring his fucking guitar. What are these people, pussies? Just tell him.
Yeah, I guess.
Say, hey, stop bringing your guitar. It's so freaking annoying. I don't want to hear you playing your damn guitar while we're at a bonfire.
And when you do that, everybody's going to applaud, like, thank you. You're going to probably be the hero of the party for saying
yeah,
that.
Yeah, and then if anything, that person stops showing up out of embarrassment and shame.
Yeah.
Which is much better than just not inviting them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. Generally, parties I've been to where a guitar has been broken out, it's been welcomed. Generally. And the people who play the guitar tend to know when to play.
Does this guy not know when to... Is he bad?
Apparently, I think he's good, but it's not time.
His song choice is bad?
Maybe. I think it's just interrupting a perfectly good party.
I see.
Turning the attention to himself. When, in instances, like I said, where I've seen this at a party, it's been very welcomed. And it was the guitar player knew how to read the crowd and say, okay, this party sucks. It's time to break out the guitar.
What is this guy's name?
The guy that I know or the guy that...
She knows.
I don't know. I never found that out.
Oh, I thought you guys were talking about the same guy.
No, I'm talking about a different guy.
Oh.
This guy's name is Adam, the guy I know who's a
really
good guitar
player. Is that guy in Minnesota?
Yeah.
What the hell? What is wrong with your Minnesota people? They call it Minnesota nice.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, yeah, this guy... I'm telling the guy I know is nice about it. All right. Well, that was the funny one that came in at the last minute, but we had a couple of other questions.
I'm going to break up the podcast by doing this now.
Wow, you got your bottle whistle down. You should see what that looks like on Audacity.
I'm just going to keep doing that so that you get pissed. I'm kidding.
Take
I'm
a while.
Kidding. All right.
Oh, reader mailbag. We only had two questions this week come in before. And these were actually holdovers from the previous week that I didn't get to. So, come on, listeners. Go ahead and submit your questions.
How can I still be a fan of Louis C.K. and Weinstein movies? Well, you also have to put Kevin Spacey,
Bill Cosby. The list goes on and on and on and on and on. Now, Danny Masterson of That 70s Show.
Who's Danny Masterson?
Steven.
Which one's Steven?
He was the guy with the glasses. Eric's friend who didn't have the girlfriend. I think he kind of lived with the Foremans for a while.
I don't remember.
The crazy hair. Anyway, he's been accused now too. I'm just saying, the list goes on and on and on. But
I think it sucks because here's the thing: like someone dies, and you can go appreciate their work even after they're dead.
Yeah.
In this case, it's their work is dead to you.
Yeah.
You're not allowed to enjoy that work anymore.
Yeah. I loved Louis C.K. Like I said, I think in a past episode, that was my favorite comedian. And now is it okay to like go back and watch his Netflix comedy specials or can I still like him?
I think as time goes on, if there's repentance and trying to make amends and things like that, can he redeem himself? Maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
With Bill Cosby, like I don't feel comfortable watching anything Bill Cosby still. And that happened... What, 10 years ago?
Yeah.
It was a while ago.
It's a long
ago.
Time, yeah.
And so I can't watch Bill Cosby and feel comfortable about it now. And I think the big thing, though, is look how much entertainment we have out there.
Yeah.
Do you really have to have it? Do you need Louis C.K. in your life?
I will say that Louis C.K., like, as much as I like him, so many of his jokes were about masturbating.
That now you know. Yeah.
Now it takes on a whole different meaning. It's on a whole new light. It's like, oh, well, it's kind of hard to laugh at that now knowing that he forced women
right.
into
so
a room
you,
and watched.
Do you need him? No. Oh,
I really miss some of this act, though.
I
laugh
it,
so
you,
hard.
You don't need it. You don't need the Weinstein movie. Well, in the Weinstein movies, I don't know. You can't say you can't watch a Weinstein movie because his brother didn't have anything to do with it, right? It was...
Harvey and I don't even know the brother's name.
I forget the brother's name. But so you can't necessarily say I can't watch a Weinstein movie because of that stuff. But like anything Louis C.K. does, it probably can't. The Kevin Spacey stuff is difficult as well. So I don't know. I don't know if you heard, but did you hear House of Cards is going to move on without Spacey?
Yeah, I don't even know how yet. How do you write that out of the show?
Just kill him in episode one.
I guess.
I mean, why not? And to be quite honest, Robin Wright has been probably the biggest character in that the last few seasons as like her. I think she's a way better actor. I think she's actually more powerful, like in a, you know, mm-hmm. like, I don't know, her presence, everything is totally different. So if they get rid of him and then they move on with the show and they maybe put in other characters, and I think that's a good idea.
Yeah.
But it sucks because if someone new is coming into House Cards, they're going to have to go through season one all the way up to current.
Yeah. I think the only answer I can come up to this is you preface whatever you watch like by saying or stating, especially if it's amongst other people, like, I know that Louis C.K. has done this and I don't condone this sort of activity, but I'm still going to watch this anyway because in theory the jokes are funny. I think as long as you preface it with some sort of like disclaimer before you watch it, I think you're in the clear.
If it's mostly Louis C.K., though, I don't know that you can.
But there's so many. Just using that as
like
an example.
Like, if he's in, like, in Parks and Rec, he's in Parks and Rec.
Yeah.
You can't not watch Parks and Rec and hurt the other people of that show because mm-hmm. of the one person who made a mistake. But if it's, like, a U.S. Louis C.K. comedy special, you're probably just going to have to avoid that from now on.
Yeah. Can I watch old episodes of The Apprentice after 19 women accused Donald Trump of sexual assault? Is that okay?
I don't know how the hell... How does this happen with all the actors and then you have a president who has admittedly grabbed pussies?
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense to me.
No, and Al Franken is forced to resign tomorrow because of his actions towards women, yet Roy Moore in Alabama has done much worse and he's still on the ballot for elections. So I don't get it. Like, politics is completely off the charts. But
well, I think the difference is there's... So here's what's weird about our like society and everything that's going on. Louis C.K. admitted
mm-hmm.
he made a mistake. Al Franken
yeah.
admitted.
And there was pictures.
Yeah. But even so, he still... I don't know if the pictures have been released yet, but these people are admitting and apologizing.
Yeah.
But the Roy Moore and the other guys are denial. Denial, denial, denial.
Yeah.
They're not admitting anything. So then it becomes a question of, well, maybe they have a right to be denial. Maybe they didn't do anything, right? And yeah. I think that's what keeps them going. So it's hard. It's like the people who actually are admitting they did something and apologizing for it are actually getting completely shunned and thrown
sure.
out. And
yeah.
then the people who are denying are being like revealed, like, ah, yeah. this person's, keep them going, keep them in office, vote for this person.
I mean, we have Access Hollywood audio footage of Trump saying these things. And apparently he's, before he apologized for it, now he's denying it.
Well, like, he didn't really apologize for it though. His apology was very...
Oh yeah. It was
odd.
A terrible apology.
Yeah. So I don't know. Yeah.
Now he's like essentially contradicting things he said a year ago.
I think it sucks that someone who does admit they had a problem, they are trying to... I know that there are victims of this situation, but someone who's in denial has those same victims. The difference is that it leaves a question in your mind of if it's true or not.
Yeah.
Whereas when you know that someone admits it, then you know it's 100% true that they screwed up and whatever. And so you instantly shun that person. But the person who is in denial, and that, again, that's brought up by the innocent until proven guilty
mm-hmm.
Type situation. And it kind of sucks. It's kind of like one of those situations where you got all these people, like, basically the best thing that Louis C.K. could have done, the best thing Kevin Spacey could have done, the best thing, they could have just all denied it.
Sure.
I have no idea what the hell they're talking about. You guys are crazy. Like, what are you talking? There's no such thing. This is a totally fabricated story. This person's making it up. And then there'd be supporters on both sides, like, I believe Kevin Spacey, and I believe this person. And so, but then they had the heart in the conscience to say, I screwed up and I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
But now 100% of people are like, well, he obviously screwed up. So shun, 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 shun. But then you have these politicians that are still in office that
yeah.
are being accused of something that they're denying. And so you have people on both sides. He should be taken out of office. No, we support him. People are lying about him. It's all a witch hunt.
Yeah.
So, it's like so difficult to navigate all this.
It is. I use the Baseball Hall of Fame as a very good analogy or metaphor to this whole thing. Is like Barry Bonds has never admitted to taking steroids, but he's not in the Baseball Hall of Fame. People are generally like, nah, I don't think so. No, we don't believe you. Yet the people who have come out and directly admitted that they've done it, some of them are starting to get a pass a little bit here now, 10 years later, 10, 15 years after the fact.
Is Pete Rose in there yet?
No, he never will be.
Right. And what's weird about that is like his was a gambling situation. And he was not gambling on his own sport, as far as I know. It was
yeah.
all on other sports. But you're not allowed to gamble when you're professional sports. And this was in the early 90s, I think. So at the time, he was completely shunned from baseball.
Yeah.
And so his actual career in baseball is not recognized in the Hall of Fame.
Right.
And I think there's been talks of him maybe possibly getting into the, but they won't let him. And to me, it's interesting that you have these people that like had a career because they doped.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. That the only reason they had a career was because they doped. And some of those people do get in the Hall of Fame, either because of denial or whatever. And Pete Rose, who gambled on sports while he was playing professional sports, is no longer ever going to be allowed to be in this Hall of Fame to recognize his actual body of work as a sports player.
Yeah, the worst thing about Pete Rose is that he didn't bet against his team. He bet on his team.
Right.
Who cares?
Right.
Who cares? I don't see why that's even an issue.
No.
All the more reason to win.
Right. So to me, it is interesting that Pete Rose isn't in it, but then people who used drugs to enhance their body, because some of them have gotten in.
That, they have, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you. We'll be wrapping up here in just a minute. Okay.
Yeah, but, they've gotten in under the...
Some false pretenses, maybe.
I'm sure there's people that haven't been caught.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I guarantee there's a lot of Hall of Famers who have done something or another. But another question. I know we've gone off topic a little bit, but like at the same time, like some of these guys who are being caught in these sexual assault things, as bad as it is, like these people have done a lot of good for the world. They've entertained millions of people. They've donated lots and lots of money to charity. They've probably done a lot of other great things in their life. But one misstep can take you down completely. Is that weird? Like how much good you can do doesn't negate or is negated by one misstep?
I think the problem is with the... If it's a power situation, which the Weinstein was and Louis C.K. was as well, where they wouldn't have had the availability had they not been in this position of power. And they abused that power in the wrong... the worst way. I think that a lot of people need to reflect on... I'm not going to sit here and preach a religion or anything like that to people, but at the same time, there are things in religion that kind of... In all basis of religion, it's to treat people better and have a conscience and not do bad things and things like that. So whether you're Christian, whether you're Muslim, whether you're Buddhist, whether you're whatever, all of it kind of comes to some kind of a trail of enlightenment that says I don't have to be this horrible person or be horrible to other people.
Yeah.
And so when there's someone who gains that power and then they think to themselves, I don't have to play by the rules anymore, I can do whatever the hell I want because I'm a celebrity.
Mm-hmm.
That's an issue.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a big issue.
I like to look at the Michael Vick situation. Remember how outcast from society he was at one point after the whole dogfighting ring thing? And it took him a while, but like eventually he got kind of accepted back into society by some, not all, but by the majority. I wonder
most
5 years from now.
People should be somewhat forgiving.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a forgiving thing, but I don't know. The Michael Vick thing still kind of pisses me off because obviously that's an innocent animal that literally has no idea of what the hell's going on. But do people make mistakes and you should be forgiving them? Absolutely. I mean, that's taught to us. We should all be forgiving at some point. Sure. But if someone's repeating over and over and over the same mistakes... Obviously, they have some evil in them of some type, right?
Yeah. My prediction, by 2022. By 2022, we'll see Matt Lauer back on the air in some network. Charlie Rose, maybe, if he's still up to it. Like, some of these guys are going to get their jobs back, I bet.
What about Bill O'Reilly?
I think that he's dug his own grave, but there's some.
How old is he? 2022. He's not going to be around.
5 years from now. I mean.
Oh, it's only five. Oh, my God.
In 5 years.
Oh, man. I've seen some of these people. It's only 5 years from now.
Yeah. I think once the dust settles, once they've been out of the public spotlight for a while, it's like, oh, yeah, whatever happened to Louis C.K.? Like, I bet by 2022, there'll be a big comeback tour. People will be embracing him. He recovered, he apologized, he went through some counseling, whatever. and he's back and he's new and it's okay to like him again. I bet give it 5 years and most of these guys will maybe be accepted back into society.
I think if the people take the right steps to recover and repent and apologize, then at some point, yes, they will be accepted back. But
yeah.
I think if they don't do those steps, or they think they're above those steps, then they're not going to be accepted back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, wow. Well, that's a good question there.
So, yeah, sorry that went on for a while.
I think we answered Tommy's question pretty well.
I know your whole point of this question was is that you just want to watch more Louis C.K.
Yeah, stuff. Right. Is it okay if I watch that Netflix special?
You're going to have to wait 5 years, I think.
Yeah, I think so.
See what he does.
Let's
over
let
the
dust settle, like I said.
Is he even on Netflix? Did they take him off yet?
They didn't take his specials off, no. I think they're still there. The one that they're about to release, they aren't going to anymore.
Okay.
Man, I laughed at those, though. So funny. Next, our final question on today's episode, and this is kind of a dumb one, I think. How to buy a round for everyone at a work happy hour? And I think this friend went on to elaborate a little bit and say, like, every time he tries to buy a round, somebody stops him. It's like, oh, no, your money's no good. Or somebody else will pay for it or won't let him buy it. How do you buy a round of
here's
drinks?
What I'm going to say, because this is Brandon from Indiana.
Yeah.
Brandon, you aren't trying to buy a round of drinks. If you were actually trying to buy a round of drinks, you would get it done.
Mm-hmm.
It's not hard. It's literally you go up to the bartender from behind the bar. You say, hey, I want to buy a round of drinks for these guys. Put it on my card. Just ask them what they want to drink and do not tell them you're charging it to my card. It's that simple.
I feel like
this person is saying this because they feel guilty that they are not buying rounds of drinks at happy hour, and they feel that the way that they try to express that is by saying, hey, I want to buy this round, and he knows that they're going to deny him.
I think so, yeah.
I don't know this Brandon character, but that's what I'm saying, Brandon.
I agree with you. I think it's got to be, you can't, I think if I was sitting at a work happy hour and I offered to buy a round of drinks, people would object. I think the coworkers would be like, oh, no,
of course,
no,
everybody
no.
objects.
But you just do it. You say, you just have to overpower them.
Yes.
You stand up, you give your card to the waitress and just say, make the spin them around signal.
But see, this is another Curb Your Enthusiasm episode. Do you remember the episode where Ted Danson and Larry David both had donated to that facility, and then Ted Danson was anonymous, and then Larry David, his sign was on the plaque, and then everybody was praising Ted Danson because he was anonymous, but then Larry David's like, well, that's ridiculous. You know that he did it, and it's not anonymous because you know he's telling people that he did it, so then he's getting more recognition because he went up there as anonymous, right?
Yeah, yeah.
So my response to this is, if you're the guy going, here's my card, take my card in front of everybody, it's not going to happen.
No, no.
But if you're okay with being anonymous, you're going to get it done. You just go up to the bartender, you say, hey, don't let him know, put it on my card. And then at the end of the night, if you feel like telling them, I got that round for you guys.
Yeah.
That's cool. You can kind of say it as a slight passing thing. But they're not gonna say no to free drinks from a bartender.
No. I guess the reason you would do that in the first place is to make a show of it. And you want people to know that you are the one buying
it. Well, I will say that it is important to do that if you're in a business relationship situation. You always want to at least buy one round of drinks. You don't want to be the suckler. I'm going to him the suckler. You don't want to be that person that always just takes the free drinks from everyone that's buying. You do definitely, especially in a business situation.
Eventually you have to buy.
Eventually you have to go, hey, I'm going to buy a round for everybody. You know, it's on me. Because then the next time that business situations come up, they're like, hey, let's invite what's his name out. He was awesome. And you're gonna always be in that that great work transaction. In your case, you just get a market price bill that you run up on.
That's a story for another episode.
I think we've told it.
I don't know if we've told it on the air.
No.
We'll save it for next time. I do remember the summer of 2003 though, when I first turned 21. The whole summer I was working up at this amusement park, like all summer long. Like there'd be parties at our apartment every night, and I never paid for a drink the whole summer. Like. People would just show up with cases of beer, and I eventually...
Did you have a bunch of leftover stuff, too?
Oh, totally. Yeah, the fridge would be full of leftovers.
Now, would you drink it without having a party? Like, would you drink the leftover stuff with just you and your roommate or whatever?
At that point, I was still kind of conscious, like, should I? I don't know if it's good for my health or not. I mean, I was still young enough to where I... But no, I typically just waited for a party.
Oh, well,
but
then you're fine.
Yeah, normally, though, at one point I announced midsummer, stupid me, you guys, I haven't paid for anything yet this year.
Oh, you
and they're
announced
like, you
it.
Son of a bitch.
You announced it.
I announced it. I'm like, I haven't paid for a single beer all summer. And they're like, oh my God, you son of a bitch. I'm like, I don't know how. I'm not 21.
Well, why? Okay, there's never a time when you would announce that you haven't paid for
it.
This question is, how do you buy around from people? And you should have just been like, hey, next time, guys, don't bring anything. I got it.
So, yeah. So the one time I did buy something, I made a real show of it. Like, I bought these for everybody. I bought these, everybody. Hey, this is on me.
Wait, but you told me recently that you bought a round in South Dakota for a bunch of people at a bar, right?
I sure did.
Did you make a show of it?
Yeah, I mean, it was pretty obvious. I got the first round, held up my card, and everybody, and it was that reaction that, like,
and
oh, no,
were people,
no.
Like, all in love with you? Were they like, yeah, good job,
no,
thanks,
they
man.
Were like, oh, you don't have to do that. It was pretty much
But
the,
you did buy it?
Yeah, I bought the first round. Right. And I bought 7 drinks for $12.50, which is the going rate at the Yale, South Dakota bar.
Man.
It was happy hour. It was
125. We should do the podcast from there.
I would love to. Let's go to Yale, South Dakota.
You know
Dakota
what? Sometime we should do that. I'll go with you.
Okay.
I want to go hang out in Yale, South Dakota.
If you don't mind flying Austin to Minneapolis to Sioux Falls with a 2-hour drive afterwards. We could just drive it.
No, I'll take a flight there. That's cool.
All right. Well, I guess that about sums it up for How to Do That, episode number 7.
Yep.
We've
run a lot of time, so that's why we're not going to do the Google.
No, that's
autocomplete this week.
It's only if we need it.
And we don't need it.
No. And this episode of How to Do That was brought to you by Table.Delivery, $10 off your first order. Visit them online at Table.Delivery and enter coupon code SWEETUMS at checkout. This is Ryan Glanzer and Bart Kristoff.
Telling you to have a safe drinking evening. Because if you're listening to our podcast, you are most likely drinking right now.
Most likely.
That's the only way you could enjoy it. You can't enjoy it sober.
No.
You'd have to be under some kind of substance influence.
And
I
you're
think.
Probably in at least your fourth installment here. Like, okay, maybe I can finish it now at the gym here or something.
I mean, let's be honest. Right now, no one is listening to this portion of it. They've already... I mean, they cut off half.
How about we say if you are listening to this right now, let us know in some fashion on one of our social media channels, and we will give you $5.
Put in the coupon code on our Facebook post. Put in the coupon code. What do we put in?
Chim Rickles.
Chim Rickles. That would be spelled Chimrickles.
Sure, we'll go with that.
Chim Rickles. If you put in Chim Rickles on our Facebook page, we will send you a signed picture of Bart Kristoff and Mr. Ryan Glanzer, along with a $5 bill.
I will personally hand you a $5 bill, and if I don't have it on me, I'll go get it.
Yes.
If you're listening to this point.
You have 7 days to comply. It sounds like a ransom note.
Okay.
Before the next one is posted, though.
Yeah.
That's because we can't keep this indefinite. Because what if someday we do actually become really famous and then like 100,000 people put Chim Rickles in the Facebook
post?
Yeah,
we gotta cut this off. We'll say by December 13th.
What is today?
The 6th.
Yes. 6th or 7th. December 13th.
Okay.
By the time we start recording our next podcast, which usually happens around 5 p.m. Central Time, Austin.
On Wednesdays
at the Common Interest. If you ever want to come and hang out with us, we would love to have you come out and hang out with us.
Yeah, we
could
have a third person chime in.
Yeah, we could have a party. Let's have a party chime in. We could have a question and answer thing with a group. We have a private room. We could set you up in here.
Our Christmas special.
We're definitely not going to buy you drinks, but you could buy us drinks. But yes, between now and then, sign picture, $5 if you put Chim Rickles on any post on our Facebook page.
Signing off.
Goodbye.
Thanks for listening.
Ask Ryan and Bart how to do that. How to choose things. How to react. Two real smart guys will tell you how to do that. How to do that. How to do that.